The following is a production of Omnis.tv.
Tonight's show on Unsigned, I welcome special music guest Bryn. Also, I'll be covering NFL games this past weekend, college football's BCS shakeup, the World Series, the top movies at the box office, and much, much more. Tonight, only here on Unsigned. Hey, everybody. How's it going out there? It is Tuesday night. My name is Ryan. Welcome to another edition of the Unsigned Show. Hopefully, everybody's having a good night. Tell you what, I apologize for a delay. We had some issues with our phone system, so I do apologize about the late start tonight. But we do have a great music guest on, everyone. This is going to be a good time. So definitely, you know, if you stuck around for the delay, you're definitely going to be very happy with the music you're going to hear tonight from a music guest we're going to introduce here very shortly. Missed you last week. I do apologize about that. But hey, we don't miss too many shows. So, you know, it's always good to be back on the air. Hopefully everybody had a good week. A lot of sports stuff to cover. You know, we cover a lot of sports on the show, and we'll definitely get into that. A lot of stuff to cover, as well as our music and movies and those type of things that we always do here on the Unsigned Show. And right now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, I welcome to the Unsigned Show this evening, hailing from Los Angeles, California, the city of angels, he is not your typical rock artist. He is Bryn. Hey, Bryn, how's it going, man? Welcome to the Unsigned Show.
Hey, that was a heck of an intro.
Welcome to the show, man. Good to hear, man. I know, you know, we've had some technical issues like no other today on your end, on my end, but we have persevered today in this evening, and we got you live on the show. We'd love to have you, man. It's been a couple weeks in the works now. A pleasure to have you on the show. We got some great tunes from you as well. Now, many people probably don't know this, but you play all the instruments on your albums, which I find absolutely phenomenal. That's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show. And then I heard the music, and I was like, wow, this guy is a real talent. Now, When did you discover that, you know, I mean, that you had this talent that you could play every single instrument? I mean, you know, is this something you just kind of picked up along the way?
I pretty much just picked it up. Like, it was, I don't know, it was pretty natural. I didn't have to go do a whole lot of, you know, lessons or study or anything like that. I pretty much just always had a knack for it. I needed to improve my technique, of course, but the foundation was already there.
Very nice. Now, you play, you know, guitar, you know, drums, you sing, you have a great voice. Out of all the instruments that you do play, what's your favorite instrument to play overall?
Ooh, definitely either drums or vocals.
Very nice. Now, drums or vocals. As a drummer, I mean, I've kind of dabbled a little bit and played drums here and there. Do you have a specific brand or drum kit that you prefer to play on?
Right now, I'm pretty partial to Tama. I've always played Tama. They're great instruments, and I've had the same kit for quite a while now, and it's never let me down. It's just a great kit.
That's the cool thing about drums too. You know, you get a nice drum kit, and you take care of it, and it seems to go the long haul with you. Now, you know, as a talented musician as yourself, you know, obviously everybody has musical influences or, you know, music artists they look up to. Over the years, what are some bands or groups that you've looked to for inspiration that have been an influence to you musically?
Oh, man, I've got a bunch of them. I could go on all night, but I guess we should probably stick it to a few short lists. Dream Theater, Opeth, Alice in Chains, Porcupine Tree, Ozzy. All of those artists have had a really big impact on me and really influenced me.
Yeah, I like a lot of those bands myself. Now, we've talked about Alice in Chains on the show, and everybody knows the story of Layne Staley, unfortunately, his early passing. But Opeth, a band that maybe not a lot of people know about and probably should, in Dream Theater, Opeth, I think, right there together.
Oh, definitely, Opeth, Dream Theater, Alice in Chains, all of them are amazing. You know, funny you mentioned we were talking about Opeth there. Last night on Reverb Nation, I was one of the favorite artists from my area, and I was right there with you. It was one of those, you know, if you like, you know, Opeth, you might like Bren. You know, it was pretty cool.
Very good company, man.
That was awesome.
Yeah. Now, Ozzy is, you know, he is the godfather, so to speak. Now, there's been some rumor, a little off track here with you, there's been rumor about a Black Sabbath reunion with Geezer Butler and those guys. I've had the luxury of seeing Black Sabbath live. We've talked about on the show here a little bit. What would you think about, I mean, those guys have been at it for obviously longer than anyone could possibly think they would be. Do you think that, I mean, do you can think, you know, as a musician, you know, do you think those guys would probably should take another shot at it and make one final run?
You know what? It's one of those things that they're such classics, and you know they're older gentlemen. They've been around for a long time, but I think that you know younger generations are really starting to get into some of that older music. And just because they're older, you know, they shouldn't be written off. I mean, these guys have pretty much almost single-handedly invented heavy metal. My music, for example, would not be around if it wasn't for Black Sabbath. Nobody's, you know, none of these hard bands that are out now would be around if it wasn't for Black Sabbath. So, yeah, I totally think they should do it. You know, I think that'd
be agree,
awesome.
Man.
I'd love to go see that.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, I don't know how many times, you know, you run into a, you know, like a younger person and they're even in their early 20s or something and they're like, who's Black Sabbath? And you go, oh, really?
Yeah,
you have no idea.
That's,
yeah.
Really? That's a shame. You know, because that
is
really a shame. Because believe it or not, there was heavy music before Metallica.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Now,
and I'm not knocking Metallica either. I love Metallica.
Oh no, Metallica is one of those bands that you know is a staple as far as heavy metal is concerned. They kind of took it to the next level.
Oh yeah.
And
you do a sports show. Most of your audience loves Metallica.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think heavy metal and sports like football and stuff pretty much go hand in hand. And we'll definitely get into that a little later tonight. Now, the new
pretty
album
much.
You've been working on. You know, tell me about your writing process on this new album, you know, and the creative aspect that goes into completing songs and really making an album, something really a lot of artists really don't do nowadays. You know, everyone's just like, oh, here's one single, here's my other single, and here you are making a second album, which, you know, is a rarity these days.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I do have to be mindful that I have to sell this, you know. Because this is, you know, what I do for a living. But I'm still an artist, so it really depends. I kind of really write from song to song. And I know that sounds kind of like a cliche answer, but it really is, you know, the truth. For example, the opening track on my debut album, Anywhere But Here, is called Only Human. And I wrote the song around, you know, playing drums. I had this cool beat I was playing. Sometimes I might have, like, a guitar riff, you know, and I might be playing around with that riff. And, you know, it really depends on the song. So I don't really have anything that I, you know, adhere to, you know, rigidly. But I do have a tendency to write the music first and then the lyrics come after. That's pretty typical for me. So, yeah, but as long as it rocks and, you know, the listener is going to rock out to it, you know, that's the thing that matters the most.
Very good, man. It sounds like a pretty organic way you go about it. Now, a song that we're going to play here very shortly, which is going to be off the album that you're working on right now, which is titled Surrender Is Not an Option. Is that right?
Yes, that's the name of the new album, Surrender Is Not an Option.
Gotcha. Now, the song title that we're going to listen to here in a moment is called Ghost of Yore. Tell me about this song and how, you know, the meaning behind it and where, you know how this song came to be.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, when I was in college, I studied history, and I've always liked, you know, sailing ships and pirates and all that kind of stuff. And this song was really inspired by old maritime stories. You know, I was imagining the story of a young man who wants to go off to sea and make his fortune, but instead he and his brother stay to mutiny. And this song is really the young man reflecting on his decision after the fact, maybe wondering if he might have chosen another path.
Very nice. And we're going to go ahead and take a look at this song right now. Have a listen. This is Bren with Ghost of Yore off the upcoming album Surrender Is Not an Option here on Unsigned and Exclusive.
the seams. One man shouted, mutiny. Then my brother next called out for me, and my musket sent the captain to his knee.
Signed and exclusive by our special guest tonight, Bryn. Very good stuff, man. That makes me want to hear more from that album. I tell you what, very good song, man.
Thank you very much.
Hear the influences there. We talked about earlier, Opeth, Alice in Chains, with really your own spin on it. I really, really like that tune a lot. Seems like you've really continued to write good music from the first album to the second album. Now, we talked about your influences, you know, Alice in Chains, Ozzy, and those type of things. Now, if you could play live anywhere with any bands, what bands would you like to play live with, or even a musical group? What would you like to play? Who would you like to play live with?
Oh, definitely Ozzy, and definitely Alice in Chains, and maybe Porcupine Tree.
Right on. Okay, now I could definitely see that. Now, if you could go back, would you rather play? I guess I probably already know the answer to this. Would you rather go Alice in Chains with Layne Staley if you had the option?
You know what? I gotta be honest. I'm open either way. I really like the new guy, but man, there's something about Layne Staley too. But I try not to get too sentimental and attached to certain personalities and get more attached to their music.
Gotcha. Right on. Well, also obviously playing live is a part of music. I mean, if you could play live anywhere in front of an audience, what places would you enjoy playing live at?
Oh, definitely Madison Square Garden, in New York, the Astoria in London, and the Budokan in Tokyo.
All good places, large venues. Playing in front of an audience.
Just epic music.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you look at Madison Square Garden, which is the mecca of sports and music, and really any large event. If you're playing at Madison Square Garden, you made it. Yeah, that's a tall order. You're looking at that many people playing live. I mean, when you're playing in front of an audience, what's your favorite thing about playing in front of a large audience or even a small audience?
Oh, the best thing is when people are singing along with the lyrics. Because you feel like you've connected with them, you've touched them, and they're bothering to even learn these words. That blows my mind when somebody's singing the words of one of my songs in the audience. So I think that's pretty, it's a trip. I'll call it like it is. It's a trip.
Yeah, I imagine that's got to be a major adrenaline rush. Now, you mentioned the word epic, and that's the next song we're going to hear from you tonight, is the song Epic, which comes off your first album. Tell me about this, you know, the song Epic off the first album. And, you know, this, I think, shows really how diverse you are as a musician as well. Tell us about this song.
Well, for this song, I was watching the news, and I was seeing different politicians debating, and they all seem to be saying the same nonsense, regardless of which side of the aisle they prefer. And they seem to be more interested in building some flimsy little legacy for themselves, rather than doing the work that we, the people, have hired them to do. And Epic is really about that.
Very profound, very deep. I really like it. This is Epic here on Unsigned, another exclusive Bren Music. Is Epic by Bren here on Unsigned, another exclusive. Bren, great tune off the first album, titled Epic. Now, moving on tonight, again, dude, thanks for doing this, man. I hope you're having as much fun as I am. This is really good stuff.
Oh, I'm having a blast. I'm absolutely having a blast. I love doing these things.
Wonderful, man. Hey, I had a question for you, a little off the path here for you now. You know, obviously you play all the instruments, you know, you do the guitars, the bass, you sing, you do the drumming, phenomenal, phenomenal stuff. Now, when you play out, do you have a touring band that you usually go with? I mean, do you audition musicians for, you know, for the music?
Yeah, right now I've got a bass player, a guitarist, and a keyboard player, you know, Yuji and Tim and Hamid, and they are really good players, and, you know, I hold auditions whenever I need to go out and play, and right now I'm really liking the guys that I have, so, you know, whenever you see me, those are probably the guys you'll see with me.
Very so, nice. It's always good to have
my manager,
solid musicians. Oh, I'm sorry,
I was going to say, my manager, my manager's got a really good ear and a really good eye for, you know, what's going to be the best thing. And so Margaret's her name, Margaret Giroux over there at IMT Agency. And she, she definitely has been really helpful in helping me find the right guys to make my tunes sound as good as they can live.
Very nice. Yeah, she's been great to work with. You've been great to work with. Now, as you know, we talk a lot of sports on the show. Tell me, you know, some sports that you enjoy.
Well, you know, I've never been much of a team sports kind of guy. I've always preferred solo sports. I've kind of always been an army of one, I guess. I do like bicycling. I do like martial arts. I like archery and I like skeet. You know, martial arts and the bicycling kind of go with the drumming. You know, you use a lot of the same,
sure,
you know, muscles and things like that.
But, cardio, the stamina, the strength it takes to do it.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. I do appreciate what it takes to work and be part of a team and work in tandem with one another in order to achieve an objective, though. So that's always admirable.
Oh, yeah. You know, on the solo athletes such as bicycling and martial arts, again, kind of steering from script a little bit. I mean, you have Lance Armstrong, a guy who's, you know, I don't think anybody can question that he's probably the greatest bicyclist or cyclist in the world. You know, when you see something, you know, guys like that, I mean, this guy's overcome cancer and all these different things. And then you have, you know, trainers treated him badly, you know, and accusing him of, you know, HGH and, you know, steroids, those type of things. What do you think about that kind of thing?
You know, it's one of those things that I honestly, I don't buy the whole steroids thing with Lance Armstrong. I just don't. And maybe that's because he's one of those, you know, figures that you really look up to and you think, man, this guy, I mean, the whole cancer portion of his story is, it's amazing. And he's, you know, he's still a dedicated, you know, athlete, and he's still up there doing his thing, you know, and I don't think he was doing anything funky. I think those are just naysayers that are jealous of his success and jealous of his talent.
You know, and I kind of tend to agree with you. And a lot of times, you know, when we've talked about this on the show, you know, with, you know, Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa and all these guys in baseball and, you know, those guys, I mean, showed the signs of juice, you know. So.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, some of those guys, I mean, they were caught red-handed. You can't BS your way around it, you know. But, you know, some of them didn't do it. And I think Lance Armstrong is definitely, in my opinion, is one of those that I don't think he did it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that this guy has done so much, you know, for cancer awareness and other charities. And the amount of world, you know, tours that he's won, the championships he's won as a cyclist will never be matched. There's no doubt about it. Now, the other thing, archery and skeet shooting, I don't know a whole lot about that stuff. Now, I do know back in the old days when I took shop in high school, we had a shop teacher who was an archer. He was very good, but he also had seizures. So you figure that out. He was an archer, a woodshop teacher, and he had seizures. So, you know, that's definitely a triple combination you don't want to mess with, you know?
He's an epileptic Robin Hood. can you imagine if, like, you know, Russell Crowe was epileptic and he's, you know, having a seizure? I'm not to sound insensitive, but, you know. That
would be funny,
because he was Robin Hood.
That's funny. Very, very funny stuff. Now, I know you're not a big team sport guy, and that's fine. Everybody's got their own thing. You know, And we talked about this on the show quite a bit as far as the music aspect and the halftime show of the Super Bowl. Now, this year, the report is that Madonna is going to do the halftime show. I'm not overly thrilled about it. We poked fun at the halftime show this year with the Black Eyed Peas because I thought it was a black eye for music. It was absolutely horrible, in my opinion.
Black Eyed Peas.
It just was not a good show for the halftime show.
No, they're good musicians. They write great songs, but I don't know. I don't really think of that as being football Super Bowl music.
I agree. I've actually seen them live in a smaller venue, and they were actually decent. I think that was just too big a stage for them
awesome,
at that point
man.
In time.
Now, who are some
artists that you would like to see? I brought up Metallica, maybe the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I think are bands that would, you know, kind of fit the mold of a halftime show at the Super Bowl.
Maybe not. For me personally, definitely Metallica, but maybe not Red Hot Chili Peppers. But then again, I don't know. It depends on the listener's taste. But I think artists who are definitely making more aggressive music, you know. It's football, and when you think of football and the Super Bowl, you know, you're thinking of the ultimate testosterone festival. This needs to be, like, you know, heavy, heavy music, you know? Stuff like Flames, you know, or you know, stuff like that.
I agree. I think that, you know, appealing to the mass crowd, but also still having a band that, you know, can capture the attention of an audience of that magnitude. I mean, obviously, I think Madonna could probably do that. It's just something. If it were 1989, I would say, yeah, let's do it. You know, Material Girl all the way. But you know, it's, you know, at that time it would be 2012. I don't think Madonna's necessarily that relevant music wise, in my opinion. But getting back into the music side of things on your behalf, the new album you've been working on, you know, tell us about, you know, the writing process from the first album going into the second album. And also, do you have a release date set for the new album?
I haven't set a release date for it yet. I'm just, you know, I'm working on it. It's almost done. It's pretty close. It's getting there. So I'm hoping to have it out by the end of the year. And I think I'm going to make that, that goal. But as far as like working on it, it's pretty much going song by song, and if something comes to mind that I think would work, I do it, and if I don't think it's going to work, then I don't do it. So it's pretty simple, it's pretty laid back. I just do my thing, I go in there, and I you know, I'll start writing something or recording something. It's, you know, back to that, I hate to wax cliche, but it really is on a song-by-song basis how it gets done.
No, I think it's fine, man. The new album, Surrender Is Not an Option. Looking forward to it. End of the year is always good. I mean, you know, for everyone out there listening, definitely, you know, stay tuned because it sounds like it's going to be a good stocking stuffer on the end of the year for Christmas. So maybe just, you know, your organic way of doing it, it's going to plan out well for you.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's if you like the first record, you're really going to like the second record. So I took pretty much what I felt were the most, you know, what is Bryn? What does Bryn do? And I did more of what Bryn does best. So I think it's going to really,
man, very good.
It rocks. It's heavy. It's a bit heavier than the first album. So I think that's going to be something that a lot of people really enjoy, especially people that like the kind of stuff that, you know, tune into, the kind of people that tune into your types of show. You know, I think you guys will definitely dig it. And I think the general listeners will definitely dig it.
Yeah, I think you're right, man. Everything that I've heard of yours, music-wise, from the first album and the few songs that I've heard from the new album that's coming out, I really like it, man. I think you're progressing very well. I really like the organic sound that you've kind of mentioned and talked about on the show, your process, and just, you know, the overall sound. It's what you want to do. It doesn't sound overdone or forced. I really like it a lot. Now, moving forward, you know, obviously maybe future albums down the road at some point. I hope so. I think you're great. But is there any special guest or music artist that you would maybe entertain the idea of working with in the studio for maybe a track or two?
Oh, I don't know. Right now, I'm not having any guest musicians. I like to do it all myself. It's kind of, I don't know, it's a nice creative outlet for me, and I'm capable of doing it, so I just do it. As far as in the future, I don't know what tomorrow holds. I'm open. I'm always open to new ideas and to seeing what happens.
Right on. Now, if people want to hear, you live anywhere or upcoming shows, they want to, buy tickets or get the album or, get your first album, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you to do that?
Oh, definitely. If you want to buy the album or even the new album once it's out, the best places are on iTunes, Amazon, and CD Baby. Definitely iTunes. I can't stress iTunes enough. That's the go-to where everyone wants to go buy their music. And as far as keeping up to date, I keep all my bulletins on all my social networking sites like Facebook and Reverb Nation. I keep them up to date. And do you mind if I give those addresses?
Yeah, go right ahead, man.
Okay, it's facebook.com/BrynBand and reverbnation.com/BrynRocks. So those are the two main ones that I keep, and I keep all my blogs updated. I keep all my bulletins updated. So yeah, and you'd be able to find information on upcoming shows, events, what's up with the record. Some people like to keep up to date with being in the know about what's new as far as the record goes. So, and that's really cool too. I like to interact with people with stuff like that.
Very good, and we'll also update those links on the show when we post it tomorrow on the website. Obviously, we're doing a live show now, but when we post the podcast tomorrow afternoon, we'll post links on our site as well, so people who are listeners of the show can go out and check you out, read your bio, and see what you're really all about. I think they're really going to like, they got to like what they're hearing tonight, and there's definitely more to hear down the road. Hey, Bryn, thanks for doing this, man. Pleasure to have you on. I hope you had as much fun as I had.
I had a blast. I really enjoyed myself. Thank you for having me, Ryan.
Hey, our pleasure. Always good to have good musicians on the show. We're going to leave everyone with one more song tonight. This is off your first album titled Only Human. Anything that we should know about the song before we go ahead and play out here?
It's really fun to play. It's really fun. It's a fun song to play. We usually open the show with this song, and I pretty much wrote the whole song around the drums. That's kind of unusual, I guess, for a song to be written around a drum part. But it's really fun to play.
Very nice. Hey, Bryn _ music on Twitter. Bryn, thanks for coming on the show, man. Had a pleasure, and hope to have you back sometime, man.
Thank you. I'd love it. Absolutely, I've had a blast doing your show, Ryan, and being your guest. Thank you for having me.
Hey, anytime, man. Everyone, this is Bryn here on the Unsigned Show. We leave you with Only Human. time. Another exclusive special thanks to Bryn, great musician from Los Angeles, California. Look forward to having him on at some point in the future. Definitely check him out on Twitter. And also stay tuned for the link coming this week once this show is complete, where you can access and get his music. A lot of good songs, and the new album, from what I've heard, is going to be great. So definitely something to look forward to at the end of the year. Moving on here tonight on The Unsigned, let's get back into our pigskin pick'ems. It is the NFL. It went an ugly week for the NFL primetime games, and we'll get into that in a second. Now, we missed last week. And there was something that happened last week that I want to talk about. And I'm going to go ahead and bring it up, even though it's a little bit dated news as far as sports is concerned, but I thought it was definitely worth mentioning. The San Francisco 49ers headed to Detroit to take on the Lions 2 weeks ago. And a handshake that it really is still making headlines, and they're still talking about it in certain aspects. Lost in the shuffle of that game was the 49ers coming off and coming into Detroit and getting a very hard-fought win, 25-19. There was a heavy dose of Frank Gore. Yada, 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 all this is happening. Great, great. 49ers win. Okay. Now, at the end of the game, Jim Schwartz and Jim Harbaugh meet. And most coaches always meet about midfield or so, and they shake hands. Well, Jim Harbaugh is jumping up and down. He grabs Jim Schwartz's hand and shoves him in the back, as in basically saying, get the heck out of my way. May the Schwartz be with you, so to speak. I don't like Spaceballs, Jim Schwartz, and shakes his hand really hard and moves along. Well, Jim Schwartz takes exception to this, and the two had to be separated in a frenzy going into the tunnels at Ford Field in Detroit. So these two get separated, and now it makes me wonder if Jim Harbaugh would have done. I don't like what he did. I really don't. Just shake hands, you know, be done with it, and go to your locker room and enjoy the excitement of a big win with your teammates, is the way I look at it. It makes me wonder if Jim Harbaugh would have done this with Rex Ryan from the Jets, Mike Tomlin from the Pittsburgh Steelers, or the Hall of Famer Bill Belichick. I don't think he would have done that at all. I thought it was a classless move, and it shows absolutely no sportsmanship on his part. And just like Mike Ditka said later that day, it shows you where today the athletes and coaches are, where it's all about me and it's not about the team. You know, Bill Cowher said after the event that if Jim Harbaugh would have done that to him, he definitely would have went after him. I have no doubt. Being a Cleveland fan, I got to see a whole lot of Bill Cowher when he was a coach, and there's no doubt that he would have not tolerated that at all. So now the NFL, they don't find the coaches at all, which I find amazing. Instead, they sent out a memo on handshaking. Really? A memo on handshaking. Yes, I was able to get a hold of that note, and I want to read it to you now. Dear NFL coaches, after a win or a loss in a game, show some good sportsmanship and have a nice handshake with one another. Firm yet respectful. No limp handshakes will be allowed. Please make this quick and also efficient. A handshake is initiated when two hands touch immediately and is commonly done upon meeting, greeting, parting, offering, congratulating, expressing gratitude, or completing an arrangement in sports or other competitive activities. It also is done as a sign of good sportsmanship. It's a purpose to convey trust, balance, equality. We want to remind you that a handshake is a handshake. It is a short ritual in which two people grasp one another's hand, like hands, in most cases accompanied by a brief up and down motion. Grasp hands. Signed, your commissioner, Roger Goodell. Thank you very much, Roger Goodell. I appreciate that. Moving on to the actual games of the week here. Going into last week, I was 52-36 on the pigskin pick'em. I went 8-5 for the week. I could have lied and told you I picked them all because you didn't hear my picks last week, but I went 8-5. That leaves me at 60-41 going in to this week's games. Now let's cover the games that transpired on Sunday and Monday night. You had the Chargers, the Jets. The Chargers travel east. I thought it was going to be a good ball game. I thought the Chargers would win this thing. Unfortunately, they come up as a struggling team, and the Jets, Plexico Burress, gets three touchdown passes from Mark Sanchez and a comeback win at home against the Bolts. A lot of trash talking on and after, before this game and after this game. All I got to say is stay classy, San Diego. Stay classy. The Jets get a much-needed win, 21-27 in favor of the J-E-T-S. Jets, Jets, Jets. Seattle Seahawks head to Cleveland. I thought this was going to be an ugly game, and boy, was it. It was ugly. Unbelievable. A score of 6-3 was the final. But I tell you what, the Browns defense, which is now ranked top five overall in defenses in the league, did their part. And as ugly as it was, the Browns get a win, 6-3. Redskins take on the Panthers in Carolina, taking on rookie Cam Newton, who had himself a heck of a ball game. And they get a W against the Washington Redskins. Big loss for the Redskins here. They lose running back Tim Hightower for the season with a knee injury. He is done. Now, here's a game I thought that was going to be a really good game. That's the Tennessee Texans. The Tennessee Titans taking on the Houston Texans in the AFC South battle. I thought that, you know, Matt Hasselbeck coming off a bye week in Tennessee at home was really going to, you know, at least make it competitive and try to get a win. I was absolutely shocked. The Texans come to Nashville and leave the Titans basically wondering what kind of country song they need to write. 41-7 beatdown. I have the song right here. It goes like this. Oh, we are the Tennessee Titans, and we got our butt kicked. I might even have found my lost dog, but we paid Chris Johnson all this money instead. Oh, woe is me in Nashville, Tennessee. Titans get shellacked by the Texans. The Texans? 41-7. It is Tebow Mania. Oh. Man, Tebow Mania, really? Denver Broncos head to Miami to play the winless Dolphins. Tim Tebow had about, 8 yards passing through the first 56 minutes of the game. And this is the most talked about, worst football game you're ever going to hear about. This game was awful from start to finish. 15-0, the Denver Broncos defense makes the plays. They get an onside kick, and Tim Tebow gets an ugly win, a win is a win in the NFL. They win in overtime 18-15 in comeback fashion. Tim Tebow. Dun, 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 dun. He's like the reverse LeBron James. Plays horrible for three quarters and wins in the fourth. And obviously LeBron James plays three quarters and yeah, you know the joke. But moving on, the NFL goes to London. This is something they've been doing a lot. This is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Chicago Bears. Welcome to London. Cheerio, good chap. Pass me the tartar sauce and give me a pint of bitters, because this was one heck of a sloppy football game for London, people of London to see. Four interceptions by Tampa Bay running back Josh Freeman, two interceptions by Chicago Bears quarterback Jay Cutler, but the Bears hang on for the win in London at Wembley Stadium, 24-18. Running back Matt Forte for the Chicago Bears gets over 150 total yards from the line of scrimmage. I tell you what, if the Bears don't pay this guy money, somebody's going to pay him a lot of money at the end of the season, because this guy's been putting up some serious, serious numbers in the running and receiving department. The Falcons and the Lions. Again, the Lions are in news, but before we get to the so-called news here, we have basically the Falcons putting the Lions on a two-game running streak, and the Falcons kind of getting back to what I thought they should do, and that's running the football, because the Lions obviously can't stop the run. And now they have issues again with Matthew Stafford possibly being injured. I just wonder if this guy can stay healthy at all. But again, the Falcons win a close game, 23-16. What happens afterwards is that this is kind of what I've alluded to in weeks past, that the Atlanta Falcons are not really a mentally, physically tough football team, even though they did get the win Sunday against Detroit. They went crying to the media that guys were trash-talking and saying certain things to their quarterback that got hurt in the game. I'm sorry, I don't think there's any place for this. The things that are said on the field of play, whether on the basketball court or on a football field, should remain on the field. You don't go to the media and whine and cry about trash-talking. I didn't like that whatsoever. But needless to say, the Falcons do get a win. I like that the Donigan Sue from the Detroit Lions defensive tackle called out Roddy White. He called him Robert White. He's like, I don't care what Robert White says. Very good stuff. You have the Steelers taking on the Cardinals in the desert in Arizona. And I tell you what, this is a rematch of the Super Bowl a couple years ago. And the Steelers, a rough day, but they find a way to win. Steady as it goes, they win 32-20. Even despite the issues they have on the offensive line. But again, they beat another sub-500 team. Their true test does come this weekend. The Kansas City Chiefs taking on the Oakland Raiders, who made a big trade last week to get Carson Palmer out of Cincinnati. They gave up a first round and a conditional second round pick for the following year for him. He comes in as a relief pitcher, so to speak, because Kyle should have been a Boulder through three interceptions in the game, and then Carson Palmer comes in and throws three interceptions on his own. KC, who started 0-3, has now won three in a row. They wipe the black hole so to speak, with the Raiders in Oakland, 28-0. You have the Packers and the Vikings, big-time NFC North rival. Christian Iponder, kid from Florida State, was drafted 12th overall in this year's draft, getting his first start against the defending Super Bowl champions. What a way to start. He comes out with a 79-yard bomb to Michael Jenkins for a touchdown. And the Vikings D just can't hold up, though, at the end. The Packers end up running the ball out, and they beat the rookie quarterback in his opener at home against the Packers, who stay unbeaten heading into the bye week, 33-27. Aaron Rodgers has three touchdowns, 335 yards. The Packers look like the best football team in football, no doubt about it, and then there's everybody else. The Rams taking on the Cowboys. The winless Rams come to Big D. Without their starting quarterback, Sam Bradford, the Cowboys run wild all over the St. Louis Rams. Rookie running back DeMarco Murray from Oklahoma, filling in for the injured Felix Jones, set a Dallas franchise record for most yards in a single game. 253 yards and a touchdown in the win. The Cowboys win big in Dallas, 34-7. The person who held that record before him, you guessed it, Emmett Smith. The Colts, Saints. You want to talk about taking a drubbing and getting embarrassed on national TV on Sunday Night Football? The Colts look awful. I understand there's no Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning doesn't play defense. They gave up 62 points in New Orleans, absolutely dismantle the Indianapolis Colts. They look lost and confused on the sidelines. Peyton Manning looked like his head was going to pop off. He was so mad he stormed off. He didn't shake anybody's hand at the end of the game. I don't expect him or even blame him for doing so. It was a voodoo hex all the way. Drew Brees throws five touchdowns in the game. 62-7. There's your primetime Sunday night game right there. Monday Night Football was not much better. Actually, the reverse of that. At least in the Sunday night game, you got to see a bunch of scoring. This game, you didn't see much of anything. That was the Baltimore Ravens heading to Jacksonville to take on the Jaguars, a team that's 1-5 with a rookie quarterback. And I couldn't tell which team was 1-5. The Ravens, only with one loss going into that game, looked absolutely pathetic. They didn't get a first down until about 5 minutes left in the first quarter, if that tells you what kind of game this was. The Jaguars weren't really much better other than kicking 50-yard field goals. They eke it out in the end, 12-7. Are you ready for some Monday Night Football, 12-7? I think there might have been about 250 total yards in that game. Absolutely pathetic for a Monday Night Football matchup. Next week's picks look like this. We have the Jaguars heading to Houston. I'm taking the Texans all the way here. I know that they're banged up. Andre Johnson should be back this week as well. I think they take control of the AFC South with a big win over the Jacksonville Jaguars. The St. Louis Rams welcome the New Orleans Saints into town. If they put 62 points up on the Colts, it makes me wonder if they can put 70 up on the Rams. Wouldn't shock me if they score 70. It really wouldn't. Then you have the Colts heading to play the Tennessee Titans. Chris Johnson said it's not his fault that he's averaging less than 3 yards per carry after his $50 million contract. Way to take accountability there, Chris Johnson. It's not your fault at all that you got a big $50 million contract and basically haven't even rushed for 300 yards yet and we're halfway through the season. Not his fault at all. But you know what? I think the Colts get their first win in Tennessee this week. I'm calling it. After that embarrassment Sunday night, they better come out with some fire and beat a rival Tennessee and get a win. I think they do get their first win of the season in Nashville. How about that? Dolphins taking on the Giants. You know, everyone's talking about the suck for Luck, the suck for Andrew Luck. I say it's spew for Andrew. The Dolphins head to the Meadowlands in Rutherford, New Jersey, and I say forget about it. Forget about it. The Giants are going to bury the Fins as if it were just another episode of The Sopranos come Sunday. You have the Cardinals taking on the Ravens. The Ravens, coming off an awful showing on Monday Night Football, are going to be in a bad, bad mood. And the Cardinals, I'm sorry, are sinking fast. They are not a good football team. I think the Ravens beat the Cardinals Sunday. Vikings taking on the Panthers. You have rookie versus rookie here. You have Cam Newton versus Blaine Gabbert. I'm taking the Panthers. At Cooker Carolyn says she's taking the Vikings. That's her pick of the week right there. Yeah, the Lions heading to Denver to take on the Broncos and Tim Tebow. I'm sorry, but Tim Tebow got sacked 7 times against the Miami Dolphins team that only had 8 sacks through 7 games. So the Lions are going to be feasting on some Tim Tebow in Denver. I think the Lions are going to win big in Denver, and everyone that thought Tim Tebow was not ready to play quarterback is right. He looks like a fullback trying to play quarterback in the NFL. It's absolutely horrendous. horrendous quarterback play. I don't know what they're doing in Denver, if they're just trying to prove a point or if they're trying to suck for luck or spew for Andrew, because they're in a competition with the Colts and the Dolphins right now. Now, the Washington Redskins, they have quarterback issues as well. They're going to Buffalo. Buffalo coming off a bye week at home, I think. Losing Tim Hightower in Washington and the issues they have at quarterback, I think the Buffalo Bills should win this game going away. Now you have my Cleveland Browns heading out to the Bay Area to take on the San Francisco 49ers, who are, I believe, 5-1 right now currently and sitting atop the NFC East or NFC West. Excuse me. You know what? I don't expect the Browns to win this game. I think the 49ers will win. But I tell you what, if the Browns take their top five ranked defense and force Alex Smith in some turnovers and find any type of passing game at all with Colt McCoy, I think they might be able to win. But the realistic person, the analysis person inside of me says San Francisco is going to win this ball game. The Patriots heading to Pittsburgh, to Heinz Field. This is really a true test for Pittsburgh, and I think they're going to fail that test. I think it's going to be a shootout there. A high-scoring affair. I think the Patriots win it in Pittsburgh. You have the Cincinnati Bengals, again, coming off a bye week, heading out to Seattle. I saw Seattle last week. They do not look like a good football team. And the Red Rocket, Andy Dalton, and the Bengals, who play decent defense, I think they go out to Seattle and get a win. A tough place to play, a tough place to win, but I think the young Bengals find a way to get it done. Now, here's their Sunday night matchup, much better matchup than we had last week, that's for sure. The Cowboys going to Philadelphia, playing the Philadelphia Eagles, who were on a bye week last week. This is bad blood all the way. This is a big-time rivalry in the NFL, and I expect this to be a very entertaining football game. I'm taking the Eagles at home over those Cowboys. Monday night, again, another classic matchup. You have the San Diego Chargers going to KC to take on the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm taking the Chargers in this one. Stay classy, San Diego. At Coco Carolyn, her Monday night pick is the Chiefs. You taking the Chiefs at home? I'm sorry, I got that backwards. Gosh almighty. She's taking the Chargers. I'm taking the Chiefs. You got that right? There we go. That's been your NFL pigskin pick 'em here tonight. You know, we've had a big show tonight, and I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Hope you're having as much fun as I am. And we're going to go off the path. We did a lot of NFL. Let's go off the path to talk about some things, you know, that are, you know, not necessarily sports related. Here's a really funny story. We haven't done a lot of stories like this, but I thought, you know, this would be something to definitely interesting to bring up. This guy here, a self-proclaimed superhero, wore a charcoal-covered mask two Thursdays ago in a Seattle courtroom when prosecutors said that he wouldn't, you know, he wouldn't remove the mask and that he was filing charges against people that he, you know, people filed charges against him because he pepper sprayed a bunch of people while wearing his charcoal mask. He goes by the alias of Phoenix Jones, whose real name is Benjamin John Francis. He was arrested a couple Sundays ago after police said that he had sprayed four people who had left a downtown nightclub. Benjamin John Francis said he was trying to break up the fight when he was attacked by clubgoers, insisted that police, these people say that they hadn't been fighting at all, and he says that they were. Obviously, he ends up in court. During the hearing, the officer asked Jones to remove his mask, and he complied. He also wore a superhero uniform under his button-down shirt. Prosecutors told the judge that they would need more time to decide whether to file charges in this particular case. Now, Jones put his mask back on after the hearing was over to go speak with reporters, then dramatically removed his mask to reveal his true identity. He says he's a father, a brother, and just like anyone else in Seattle, he decided to go make a difference and stop crime in his neighborhood. Phoenix Jones. I wonder if he's going to really take it the next step and get a, you know, get a cape and everything with the charcoal max. And maybe, you know, he should carry around like one of those old little boom boxes that has like some kind of like Superman music so he can like sit it down and play it and stand in the wind and you know, poke his chest out. Phoenix Jones. Dun, da, da, dun, da, da, dun. Maybe the Rocky theme. I think that'll probably work for him, right? Moving on off the path tonight. Just in time for Halloween, they got custom zombie action figure kits. You can get, you know, apparently Mr. Potato Head with zombie pieces, heads, torsos, legs, chest, pictorials, the whole wardrobe's out there. Now, speaking of zombies, as Halloween's right around the corner, a show that I've talked to our producer Mike about, and that is The Walking Dead show. We don't do a whole lot of TV on this show, really, not much at all. This is a show I think everybody should definitely take a look at. It's The Walking Dead on AMC. It kicked off a couple Sundays ago. If you're a fan of classic zombie movies and stories, and just even if you're not, this show has everything you could possibly want. It's edgy. It's dramatic. It's got a great story, in-depth character development, great tension, drama. It's got gore. It's got about everything you could possibly want in it. Walking Dead, classic TV on AMC Sunday nights. Very good stuff. Something that's not classic TV is CBS sitcom that is likely in the works titled Douchebag. Yes, I said the word douchebag. It's a working title. Who other could star in a sitcom titled Douchebag? All right, I'll give it to you. It's Limp Bizkit's former frontman, Fred Durst. I mean, the show is titled Douchebag. First person that comes to mind, Fred Durst. He's signed up on CBS to star in the sitcom and also co-produce it. The show is a working title, Douchebag Fred Durst, and it's a show about an aging rock star attempting to balance his life as a celebrity and the pressure of raising a family. It's supposed to be slated for a late fall lineup. Be surprised if that actually hits the airwaves, Douchebag Fred Durst. Have you ever wondered what a date with Scarlett Johansson would cost you? Well, I'll tell you what, it's not cheap. A date with the actress was set up for grabs 2 weeks ago at the British charity auction. An evening with Scarlett Johansson was handed out and ended up costing over £26,000. That's about $41,000 American. Rolling Stones guitarist Ronnie Wood put up the money and also agreed to split the evening with businessman Harry Becker, after he ponied up £13,000, proceeds for the dinner date went through Breakthrough for Breast Cancer. So it went for a good cause. Scarlett Johansson was not on hand at the benefit. So I wonder if she knows that she was actually sold for a date to the guitarist Ronnie Wood from the Rolling Stones. I wonder if she's aware of that or not. Rock and roll photographer Barry Frenstein, who shot the cover for Bob Dylan's The Times Are Changing, George Harrison's All Things Must Pass, and Janis Joplin as well, and other iconic works. He died today in upstate New York from natural causes. He was 80 years old. Feinstein also shot his first cover of the Rolling Stones in 1968 masterpiece Beggar's Boutique. He, again, passed away at the age of 80 today in New York City. He also worked in Hollywood, Washington, D.C., shooting Judy Garland, Steve McQueen, Richard Nixon, John Kennedy, Frank Sinatra, and other icons through the 60s and the 70s. He also directed the 1968 cult movie You Are What You Eat. Rock and roll photographer Barry Feinstein died today at the age of 80. Now, if you're looking for new music other than what we feature tonight on the show, and that is Bren music, here's some more mainstream artists that you may be interested in. Kelly Clarkson's got a new song out. Tom Waits, Bad As Me, which I'm a big Tom Waits fan. Pretty good track from him. Coldplay has a new track out. Also, T.I., titled I'm Flexing, is also out. And Pussifer, Conditions of My Parole, which is features Maynard James Keenan from Tool and A Perfect Circle, also available as well. Top movies at the box office this week. We do this every week on the show, moving from number 10 all the way up to number 1. Number 10, the movie 50-50 at $2.8 million. The movie The Thing, which is a thing that I can't believe they remade because the first one is great with Kurt Russell, $3.1 million. Johnny English Reborn, $3.8 million. The movie Moneyball at $4 million. Dolphin Tale, based on a true story, $4.2 million. IDs of March, $4.9 million. The Three Musketeers at $8.8 million. The movie Footloose, proving that dancing really is a sin, $10.8 million. The movie Real Steel, Rocky with Robots, $11.3 million. And the movie Paranormal Activity 3 at $54 million in the box office this past weekend. This has been Off the Path, and we move right along here tonight on Unsigned. My name is Ryan. Thanks for hanging out with me. Hope you're having as much fun as I am this evening as we head into NCAA football. And what a weekend it has been for the top 25. And we'll start right there with West Virginia playing Friday night in Syracuse in the Dome, losing 49-23, Syracuse with the upset. Also, Cincinnati beats South Florida 37-24. Kansas State taking on Kansas. Kansas State moving right along, 59-21 over their in-state rivals. Also, Oklahoma State taking on Missouri, a team that has really fallen by the wayside this year, 45-24 in favor of Oklahoma State. North Carolina taking on Clemson. It was close early, but Clemson really turning on the heat and the defensive pressure, winning 59-38 in Death Valley. The Arkansas Razorbacks get a big win over Mississippi, 29-24. Also, other scores through the weekend on the top 25. Boston College taking on Virginia Tech, and Virginia Tech, those Hokies, they are tough, 30-14 in favor of the Hokies. Nebraska taking on Minnesota, a team that has really struggled. Nebraska gets another win in the Big Ten, 41-14. Auburn heading to LSU to play the Tigers. It's Tigers versus Tigers. Wow, I tell you what. LSU showed no mercy, 45-10. They absolutely just mauled the Auburn Tigers on Saturday afternoon. It wasn't much of a contest at all. The Oregon Ducks roll right along over Colorado, 45-2. Texas A&M taking on Iowa State. They get a win, 33-17. Boise State taking on Air Force. It wasn't easy, but they do get the win, 37-26. Marshall taking on Houston. Houston busting into the top 25. They win big time over Marshall, 63-28. Penn State, Joe Paterno gets his 408th win as a head coach at Penn State, 34-24 over Northwestern. A very disappointing year for them. And the University of Tennessee getting beat and getting beat soundly another week, this time by Alabama, 37-6. It was close in the first half. For what it's worth, if Tennessee played one half, they'd be right there. The USC Trojans taking on Notre Dame under the lights in Notre Dame in South Bend did not end well for them, 31-17 in favor of the Trojans. And two of the biggest upsets in the BCS have just totally shook the BCS to its foundation. Let's start with the Wisconsin Badgers heading to East Lansing, taking on Michigan State. Sparty Badgers, it was a classic Big Ten matchup. Went down to the wire. It was tied 31-31 with a few seconds left on the clock, and Kirk Cousins throws a Hail Mary, his best Doug Flutie impression. The ball is tipped, caught by a former quarterback who now plays wide receiver, catches the ball, falls into the end zone. It's ruled not a touchdown. It goes to instant replay review. The review says the ball crosses the plane. It is a ruled a touchdown. Michigan State wins with no time on the clock on a Doug Flutie-like pass. This time they got Kirk Cousins, 37-31 in favor of Michigan State over the Wisconsin Badgers, thus ruining Bucky Badgers' national title hopes. Speaking of getting your national title hopes doused, Oklahoma taking on Texas Tech and Norman. Oklahoma thought they should have been number one. They were top. They were number three in the BCS. All they had to do was win against the lonely Texas Tech, right? No. They were three touchdown favorites, and they get beat in a shootout in Norman. Texas Tech wins 41-38. They hung on and get the win. The Oklahoma Sooners' national title hopes go right along with it. And steady as she goes, Stanford and Andrew Luck moving right along. They beat Washington, not much of a challenge at all for them, 65-21. Andrew Luck, they basically just run the ball and pound, ground and pound the Jets style there. Andrew Luck still has himself a heck of a ball game, 16-21, 169 yards and two touchdowns. They put 65 points up on the board. Here's your top 25 as it looks right now. A lot of new faces in the BCS poll. You have the Western Virginia Mountaineers. I don't know how they're still in the top 25 in the BCS. The Texas Longhorns at 24. Auburn Tigers with three losses still in the top 25 in BCS. Doesn't make sense. Georgia Bulldogs, Arizona State Sun Devils at 21. The Texas Tech Red Raiders, much deserving, at number 20. The Penn State Nittany Lions moving up to number 19. Michigan Wolverines at 7-1. The Houston Cougars not getting a lot of respect, undefeated. Texas A&M at 5-2 at number 16. Wisconsin drops all the way down to number 15, and ahead of them is the Nebraska Cornhuskers, a team that they absolutely annihilated at number 14. The South Carolina Gamecocks at number 13. Virginia Tech, the Hokies, at number 12. Michigan State, the Spartans, number 11. Arkansas Razorbacks at number 10. Oklahoma Sooners only dropped to number 9. I don't understand how that works on the BCS there, how, you know, Wisconsin can lose on a Hail Mary pass and drop as far as they did below a team they beat. And then you have Oklahoma that loses to a team that wasn't even ranked at the time, and they only drop a few spots. Doesn't make sense at all. The Kansas State Wildcats, a dark horse in this whole thing, undefeated in the Big 12 at number 8. The Oregon Ducks at number 7. Stanford getting no love at all at 7-0. Clemson Tigers 8-0. Boise State at 7-0. Oklahoma State at 7-0 as well, number 3. And number 1 and number 2, or 1A and 1B, however you want to decipher it, the LSU Tigers and the Alabama Crimson Tide, and they will face off 2 weeks, or a week from this Saturday. That is going to really shake the BCS up, because one of those teams obviously you're going to lose. And you have Kansas State, Oklahoma State, all those teams are going to play. So you have Boise, Clemson, and Stanford all sitting right there. And don't forget Kansas State. You know, all these teams sitting right there undefeated. So a lot's going to happen here in the next 2 or 3 weeks in college football. It's going to be very, very exciting if you're into college football. That's your top 25 here on Unsigned. My name is Ryan. I want to leave you with the World Series. It has been, I don't know if it's necessarily been a classic World Series. It's definitely been entertaining and very fun to watch. Game 3 in Texas was a blowout because Albert the Machine Pujols hits 3 home runs. The first person, he's only the 3rd person in history to hit 3 home runs in a series game. That is tied with Babe Ruth and Reggie Jackson. Anytime you're tied with Babe Ruth and Reggie Jackson in a category, you're pretty good. Albert Pujols, 3 home runs in Game 3 with 6 RBIs. The Rangers lose Game 3 at home. Game 4 was a pitching masterpiece by Derek Holland, the Rangers, and they get a win. That ties the series up Sunday night 2-2. Now, last night in Game 5, there was some controversy and maybe a mismanagement by Tommy La Russa of the Cardinals. Thus, the Rangers win Game 5, going up 3-2, heading back to St. Louis tomorrow night. The chance to sew this thing up in Game 6. I thought the Rangers would win in 6. This is their chance to do so. And that is your Major League Baseball World Series recap. Now, that's all I got for tonight. I hope you've had a good time. Thanks to Mike for doing a wonderful job as always. Also, our special guest, Bren. Very good stuff. Glad he came on. You know, we got a chance to chat with him, hear some of his music. Really good stuff. So definitely check him out as well. It seems harder to enjoy the finer things in life. Until next time, everybody, do so.